Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, a new book has shed light on Abraham Lincoln's murderer, the infamous John Wilkes Booth. While Booth is thought of as a crazed lone killer, author Scott Ellsworth's new book, Midnight on the Potomac, reveals the gunman's true personality and the political connections that fueled Lincoln's assassination. Scott is a New York Times bestselling author, writer and historian. He joins me now. Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be back on the Moncrief Show.
I'm delightful to have you back as well, Scott. I get the impression that for most people, we seem to have got John Wilkes Booth wrong.
Oh, we've gotten him completely wrong. The image that everyone has and the image that I was taught as a kid growing up in the U.S. was that he was this sort of second-rate, pathetic actor living in the shadow of his far more famous father and brother actors. He was also this sort of bumbling, you know, volatile lone wolf, and he wasn't that way at all. John Wilkes Booth, as it turns out, was an absolute superstar of the American stage. He sold out theaters from New York to Boston to Philadelphia to St. Louis, everywhere that he went. Hundreds of women would crowd outside of his dressing room, and the critics loved him. They just said he was a genius, that they had never heard Shakespeare spoken so purely and so fresh. So John Wilkes Booth was not the person that we think he was.
Right. So what was it made him go over to the dark side?
Well, I think, you know, we have some evidence of this. And one thing is John Wilkes Booth was a racist and a white supremacist, and he supported the idea of slavery, which the Confederate States were fighting the Civil War for, and wanted to help them. But we have evidence that he met with some what we believe were Confederate Secret Service agents in Boston. And then a few weeks later, he met with other Confederate spies and agents in Canada as they were starting to launch a terror war against the civilian citizens of the North. So, you know, I think there's no question that Booth, who was an actor, you know, suddenly now he wants to kidnap the president, that he knows the president's movements, all of this. So there's a lot of evidence that says that Booth didn't think up any of this on his own. Rather, he was being directed by someone else.
Would it be true to say that part of the reason why you wanted to write this was the parallels between the divided America of John Wilkes Booth and the divided America of today?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm 71 years old, and never in my lifetime has the United States been as bitterly divided as it is today. And the only time that that came close was back during the era of the Civil War. So I wanted to reach back, you know, and not write some dusty history tome, but write a book that would also help inform readers about what's going on in the country today and how the country ended up being saved and 1865, and hopefully we can do that again now.
Right. So, I mean, you were saying like people have John Wilkes Booth, the impression of him is wrong, basically. I get the impression for me now, from the Irish side, that my impression of how the Civil War ended is probably wrong as well. There were elements among the Confederate side that wanted to keep things going, were there?
Oh, absolutely. They wanted to go and go and go. What I learned in doing the work for this book was just how close the Confederacy or slavery came to survive. And it was really by the skin of our teeth. It was by a remarkable coalition of loyal Americans, just everyday citizens, men and women, black and white, you know, native born and immigrant, who really joined together and defeated the Confederacy, you know, saved the Union, destroyed slavery, and really gave America a second chance at living up to its ideals. And I should add that, you know, Irish support was really, really crucial for that. There were over 100,000 Irish soldiers or Irish immigrants who fought the Union Army. Lincoln became beloved in Ireland because people realize he isn't just defeating, you know, out to destroy slavery. He's out to increase human freedom. And, you know, he was greatly admired in Ireland, and I hope so to this day.
Oh, absolutely. So then when the war came to an end and there were still these people who are trying to keep it going, obviously trying to assassinate Lincoln is going to be high on their agenda. And Booth wasn't alone in amongst the people who were trying to take him out, as it were.
Oh, not at all. There were a number of other, you know, attempts on Lincoln's life. And also what the Confederates realized is once they, you know, they saw that they couldn't win their independence on the battlefield, they unleashed this terror war against the civilian population of the North. They're trying to get Northerners to realize, let's have peace, let's end the war, let's let the South go, let's not go. I mean, there were plans to burn down New York City. They came quite close to doing that. There was a plan to blow up the White House, to try to spread smallpox epidemics across the North. Necessity is the mother of invention, and the Confederates were quite creative in terms of how they were going to try to attack the people of the North. But in the end, the loyal citizens of the North were able to prevail.
Right. So there were other attempts on Lincoln's life, were there?
Absolutely. Confederate Secret Service agents were stalking Lincoln for some time. We know of Lincoln. I mean, there was no real Secret Service or anything like that in those days, any special presidential protection. During the summer months, Lincoln would ride from the White House to a place called the Soldier's Home, a number of miles away, to spend the evening. It was cooler up there. And he would often ride alone. And one night, as he's approaching the Soldier's Home, a shot goes off and somebody shot a hole through his top hat. So they were just inches away from killing him at that point.
There's echoes of Trump there, isn't there?
Absolutely.
My God. So how did John Wilkes Booth get involved in all of this?
Well, we have evidence that he was certainly doing a few things on his own, trying to smuggle quinine, medicines to the South, things like that. But the best of our knowledge is that he, during the summer of 1864, he met with what we believe are Confederate Secret Service agents at a hotel in Boston. And then 3 weeks later, Booth, who knew nothing about kidnapping or espionage or anything like that, went to visit some of his childhood friends in Baltimore and tried to get them to join him in an attempt to kidnap or possibly kill Abraham Lincoln. Booth at this point now suddenly knows all about kidnapping. He knows everything about Lincoln's movements in Washington, D.C. He says he knows how to smuggle him across the Potomac River into Virginia, that he has all the information for this. Well, logic tells us he didn't just dream this up in 3 weeks on his own, and rather somebody had suggested that he do it. There was a wonderful American actress named Clara Morris, who later had a long career into the 20th century, and she was one of Booth's friends, and she wrote that, the idea of kidnapping or doing something to help the South would have appealed to Booth's romantic nature. She said, but there was no way in the world he was any kind of a leader. Rather, he was a tool of someone else's to go ahead and to carry out this plot.
Right, so did not act alone then, basically.
Not at all. No, he had lots of contacts with Confederate agents, well documented.
What, did he just get lucky, or had he got a great plan, or how did he manage to pull it off?
Well, he managed to pull it off in part because there was very little protection for American presidents in those days. He was a well-known actor, a nationally known actor. He had acted in Washington, D.C. He could always go into theaters,
sure.
go backstage and things like that. And he knew when Lincoln was going to be appearing at Ford's Theater and, walked right up into the presidential box and murdered Lincoln right then and there.
What was the aftermath of that? I mean, he was much loved, Lincoln, wasn't he? The country must have been thrown into an absolute state.
Oh, they were absolutely and just absolutely, in tears. What they did is, for the first time ever in American history, they had sort of a traveling funeral. So Lincoln lied in state in the White House and the Capitol. Thousands came, and then his body was, coffin was put on a train, and it made stops in cities along the way, Albany and Baltimore and Philadelphia. More than 1 million people turned out in New York City to pay respects to him. And then, across the states of the Midwest to Illinois. And what I found most touching is, as it went through the countryside in these little villages and farm towns in Ohio and Indiana, the entire population would show up. Choirs would sing, fathers would hoist children onto their shoulders so they could, get a look at the train as it passed. And it was just an incredible, national mourning. I'm old enough to remember when John F. Kennedy died. Yeah. And how the country really mourned completely. And there was great mourning, obviously, in Ireland as well.
Absolutely.
This was of that nature or even larger.
Oh my God. And the country managed to pull through that. And that is the lesson for today, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Scott, thank you very much for joining us. That is Scott Ellsworth there, a New York Times bestselling author, writer and historian. And what it sounds like an absolutely fantastic book.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.